cry in front of your kids. It's okay.
Yep.
But show them emotion. Show, be vulnerable.
Yes.
It's okay. They can. It's okay. Just be vulnerable. You don't have to be tough all the time.
Welcome to The Art of Fatherhood, a podcast that takes you on the journey of fatherhood. Now here's your host, Art Eddy.
What's going on, everybody? Art Eddy here for the Art of Fatherhood podcast, and online I'm very happy to have AJ Buckley. Thanks for taking the time to chat with me, AJ. How you doing, sir?
Thank you, buddy. I'm good. I'm very grateful to be on your show. Just it's 6:30 my time in LA, and I'm heading to work right now to SEAL Team.
Yeah, man. We're going to talk about SEAL Team acting and fatherhood in a second, but keeping along the theme of fatherhood as well, I'm really excited to talk to you about your invention. You teamed up with a couple of your colleagues to make the paperclip line. This is great for parents, but especially for dads. And, you know, especially in the realm that I work in, you know, working with a bunch of other dad writers out there, we see a lot of, we see the need for having diaper stands and things in the bathroom. I remember trying to juggle one of my daughters when she was in diapers at like a TGI Fridays in New York City of all places, right? And I was trying to like get, like change the diaper and all that stuff, and there just wasn't a changing table. But you and your crew created a paperclip line. It's a diaper bag that has a changing station in it, man. Talk about the genius inspiration that came along to get this, sir.
Yeah, it's been quite the road and scary at times, and my wife completely thought I'd lost my mind at one point, which I truth be told, I have lost my mind. So she was right. I was a new dad. My daughter was 7 months old. It's crazy how you remember it was TJ Fridays. I remember clearly it being Pink Taco in Hollywood on Sunset Boulevard. I remember the time, the place, because it was a really traumatic experience. And I think as dad, that first time that you take your child out alone is the most terrifying feeling in the world, because you just, the ego and all the other things that you're like, oh, baby, I got this. There's no fail. You've got a child that you're responsible for. And for me, it was so overwhelming. And I just didn't know what to do. And even though I knew I could do it, there was a lot of fear and little things and worries. And is she breathing in the back seat of the car? Is she focused on the road? All these sort of things. And then, of course, when I show up to the restaurant and I was going to have her, you know, I was going to meet she was going to meet all my friends and we were going to watch some football and it was going to be great. I go to take her out of her baby seat and she has one of those poops that like I call it the magical poop. It like goes up their back. And I'm like, I don't know how that's possible.
Yep.
So I'm just like, oh no, is this just happened? I'm like talking to myself and I go to the bathroom and I am like, where's the changing table? And so I go back out to the manager. I'm like, do you have changing table? She's like, no, not in guys' restrooms. And I'm like, what? Why not? He's like, I don't know. I'm like, okay. So I go back into the bathroom. And it's a busy bathroom. I've got this crying baby now. And she can sense that I'm stressed out. And I'm like, okay. So I open up the bag. And, of course, I forgot the changing pad that we got at the baby shower.
Yeah.
Because you just don't think about those things as dad. And I'm rummaging through this bag. And I'm like, the way that I even opened it from looking down, I couldn't figure it out. My wife, when we come home from anything, she could reach into her purse and find her keys or find her lipstick and just instantly go in it. They just know where it is. I'm like looking into this dark hole. I don't know where anything is. I can't see it. I'm trying to manage everything with one hand.
Yep.
I realize there's no changing pad and there's nowhere to put her. So I have to take like my shirt off, lay her on the floor, and then put her on top. And it was crazy. It's kind of like a divine moment where the bag is. The bag was on the floor, but it was laying on top of the T-shirt. And as I was changing, I'm like, imagine if that just like fell open and there was a changing table.
Yeah.
And then I like kind of went back to my day and my thing and, you know, went out, saw the boys, didn't stay for too long because I just kind of was frazzled. I'm like, I should just go home. This is going to be, I got out of this. Okay. I should just go home. So, but I couldn't stop thinking about what this, a diaper bag with a change table. I started looking online and two, the bags that were out there either had flower prints all over them or they were super tactical and they were even more confusing than just a regular zipper bag. There's so many pockets and so many things and there was nothing simple about it. So one of my best friends, Artie, had randomly called me, who was also expecting a child and couple months later, his wife was due. And I was like, bro, do you know that there's no change tables in men's bathrooms? She's like, what? I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, I went through the whole story again. I'm like, I said, I'm looking online and there's nothing out there like this. And look, I've never been in the retail. I've never invented anything. This is not my space.
Yeah.
But I just had this gut feeling. I was like, and so I drawn a couple basically stick figures on this napkin, and Artie came over. He had no idea what the hell I was drawing. So I kind of just verbally explained it, and he got it. And long story short, we got into making some prototypes, partnered up with one other gentleman to help us really hone in the design. We flew to China and made 8 prototypes, and it was incredibly expensive. And it almost, like, to the point where this is where my wife stepped in. She's like, what are you doing? I was in between shows right now, and I was just burning through cash.
Yeah.
And with no sort of end game. But we were getting closer and closer, because as each month went by as a dad, we would start to realize, okay, well, you got to be able to open the bag with one hand. You got to be able to do a lot of things with one hand. So part of the design of the table coming out was also to being able to see what's inside the diaper bag without having to rummage through and take that away. So it was sort of this head on, like we basically looked at it like a toolbox. It was like, okay, if you look at it on and it flaps over, you see where all your tools are, you know where to go. You know, you never come to the toolbox from a zipper from the top.
Yeah.
It's always from the thing. And our wives helped with this too. They're like, actually, that would be a lot easier because you do have one hand. You got to get something, you know, when you have the table out, you can do that. But also too, there's a zipper when it's closed up, you can reach in and grab. And then I had a separate computer bag. So I was like, well, I need a place for the computer and I need a place for an iPad and then a wet sack. And it just sort of evolved and evolved and evolved. Sure enough, we patented this changing table. We had, it was like six bags of the, basically the same bag, but they're slightly different. And you could only tell them if you were us, but we went to a huge baby show, like a convention. There was one in Vegas. And we had this, you know, little booth, and we more or less went there for R&D to meet big box stores and to really understand the marketplace. My business partner already had also never really been in the space either, and he was sort of like, I'm like, look, he's the business mind. He's, you know, our company is today where it is because of his ability to kind of do this. I'm more on the creative side, and he's great with the numbers and all that sort of stuff. So we were there, and they came up and like hung a blue ribbon on us, and we're basically like, yeah, you won best innovation, bag innovation of 2017. I'm like, what? And they're like, yeah. We're like, okay, well, what does that mean? And then people started coming over and trying to take orders from us, and we didn't really know what to do. And we'd gotten a product that I was right. It was like this great, it was this great justification. Me and Artie have sort of gone down this road, and there is a light at the end of the tunnel. Although the light is very far away, we're in the right direction. We're on to something. But what we didn't realize is when we designed the bag, we were like, oh, we want the best product of this and best product of that. But then we didn't take in what it cost to ship from China and landed costs and taxes. So then we created this bag that by the time it landed, we priced ourselves out of every big box store and even online. Nobody knew who we were. And in my mind, I'm like, oh, people know I'm an actor. I'll use my platform and I'll sell diaper bags. It's, you know, it's just not the way it works. We realized that diaper bags are sold in the playground. A mom says, hey, or a dad says, you got to get this. And when a mom says you got to get this for your kid, you end up getting it. So it didn't matter what advertising campaign we came up with, which we earned so much money on there too. And we're like, think of all these clever ways to sell this. And basically the end of the day was you just had to make a good product that you'd give to the moms and the dads, and they would tell a friend, and then so would, you know,
yeah,
go, hey, what was this paperclip bag? And it was just sort of a real slow burn that we just had to accept the fact that we were in for this ride, and did we have the capital to keep going? And then what we'd also, too, being young and naive, we'd ordered, like, we were like, oh, this thing's going to fly. So we ordered, like, 3,000 bags out of the gates without one order written. And then finding out that it was too expensive. So then we just basically had a garage full of diaper bags.
Yeah.
And then again, we were back to like, we failed. We can't move these things. What are we going to do? But what it really forced us to do was focus on our e-commerce and like understand the marketplace. And we knew that we were going to have to eat this first round at a different price. But we're like, look, okay, this is what, at least if we can get them out there one by one, the word will turn into another bag coming back, or two people coming back, and then three people. So 1 month we sold three bags. The next month we sold six bags. I remember the month that we sold 10 bags. We broke 10, and it was so exciting. We were like, we've sold 10. And then the next month it was like, let's get to 20. And then we sold 20. And then it was just slow. And then it started going and going and going. And then all of a sudden, of course, we get hit again. And we're about to put another order, and we get hit with all these tariffs that were in China.
Yeah.
And we're thinking this is going to crush us because we've got a factory there. We're moving. We're so burnt out on capital, these tariffs and having to move the factory. And, you know, it was a pretty scary time because this company was just starting to pick up momentum. You know, a lot of actors that we had no, or like influencers or whatnot, had picked up the bag. Like the Kardashians got a bag, but bought both bags for one of them. I don't know all their names, but one of their baby showers.
Yeah.
So they got the bag. The Rock wife ended up having one of the bags. And that wasn't through us. That was just independently. So like this is starting to turn a thing. Other actors have started, or they'd be photographed by paparazzi out, and our bag would be on the thing, and we'd just be like, oh my God, that's our bag.
nice.
So it's the feeling of when you're kind of kicked, when you're on the ground and then something's, you know, a little sign shows you, oh no, this person was photographed with it, and we're like, oh, that's fantastic. But it doesn't necessarily translate into people rushing out and buying it, but it just validates that we're in people, there's a market for it, and it's great. So we also then only had two SKUs, and each bag has been named after one of our children.
I saw that.
So
the
Willow is obviously the first one. Then we have the Bear. Then we have the JoJo. And then we have the Ranger and the Bodhi, which are my twin boys. And then Artie's other son is Wolf. Fanny pack that was coming out, that'll be called the Wolf Pack. That'll be coming out the beginning of the first or second quarter of next year.
Yeah.
So long story short, we had to, my, and this is why I love Artie so much. He was like, these tariffs are not going to stop. It's going to get worse, and it's going to sink us. We need to, and we're barely getting by at this point. As glamorous, and people are like, oh, you guys are crushing it, these celebrities have it, we're like, oh, no, we're not. Yeah. You know, like, we're making enough to keep the lights on and order enough bags, but it's still a huge risk and still out there. So, again, it's put more capital in, believe in the product, and go for it. And, again, then each month or each quarter, there was like a five, there was never a down. It was, there was always an uptick. So we were always heading in the right direction. So we're like, okay, what do we do? Do we go source another factory in another place, or do we eat it and close shop? Like, are we willing to step up? And we all said, let's step up, put more capital in, and we will head. And it's basically just Artie and I and one other guy that are financing it. So it's not like we have any massive angel fund or anything. This is completely funded by three dads. Artie flew to Indonesia and ended up at this factory. And I really believe everything happens for a reason, because this was the greatest thing that ever happened to our company. He ends up at this factory, and they're one of the top factories in the world. And one, I can't remember how many, but there's not a lot of them out there that makes recycled plastic material that feels like Tumi. It's the most amazing material that we've ever seen, in the colors and the design, and the guy that runs the factory is absolutely phenomenal. And Artie was like, called me, he goes, our entire line in 2020, by September of 2019, our entire line will be recycled plastic, and that's ocean plastic and landfill plastic. So we were one of the very first diaper bags in the world to come out with, not only being one of the first to have this changing table, but also be the first to have this recycled plastic. And it was kind of this rebirth of the company, because before it was like change anywhere, anytime. And that was cool. But there was also, we were like, okay, there's more kids. And, you know, as a father, you're like, what is my impact on the world, with the environment, this. So we were like, perfect. It's like the next generation, being our children and being the bags, will be clean baby, clean ocean, clean planet. And that was sort of our new change your baby anywhere, anytime, but also in a way that our footprint is less of an impact of anything that we've ever done before. So the whole company changed. The diaper bags, I think, aesthetically, everything about it, I feel like this is the first time. This is a couple months ago. I feel like it's the first time our company, when we researched or launched it, that I felt like, I was like, oh, this is the difference. This is what it feels like. Because the traction and the numbers and the people going, oh, well, there's nothing like this out there. And then all the new lines that we have coming out, just in the sense of not only the changing table and it being designed by dads, and our wives had a huge impact on the design and the aesthetics and the look. Our wives figured out the name for the company. Big influence of them is why our company is where it is. It's a family business, but it's been so cool to see the response from this sort of rebranding, the look of it, the style, you know, and creating bags too that are at different price points, because we have the Will and the Bear that are the most expensive. They sit around 180. And then we have the JoJo, and I think they're around 120. And then we've got some other bags in the next quarter that'll be coming out that'll be just below that. And then Nordstrom's just picked us up, which is really cool. And I've got a couple other ones I can't announce that will be in the beginning of the second quarter where we've gotten into, which is so massive for our company. And I think, you know, I really mean this. I don't know if you even listen to this. Like, my partner Artie, he's really made some decisions on this, and he's never run a company before like this. And the baby industry it's like the music industry. It doesn't make sense. He's like, why is what are those giraffes? A Sophie giraffe? How does Sophie giraffe a hit? Like, what is it? What is that thing about? You know, like, why is Elmo so, why does every kid get addicted to Elmo and you have to be tortured for 2 years of your life listening to friggin' Elmo?
Or Baby Shark. Or Baby Shark, right?
Or Baby Shark. Yeah, it's like, why is those things? It's my priority for him to be able to continually sit down at the algorithm and try and figure it out. I don't think we've completely figured it out, but I'm where we are now. I'm incredibly proud of what our company is, what it represents, and the feedback that we're getting from dads. Because originally it was like, oh, we're going to do a diaper bag for dads. But for us, it's now become creating a diaper bag that both the mom and the dad feel comfortable carrying. And it goes, it's fashionable, it's functional. Like, it goes with, if you're wearing a nice suit, it goes with it. It also, a lot of people, because the style of the bag, have bought the bag and just the tape, because the change tape is removable, they just take it because they like the look of the bag. And it's because it's got a place for your computer and your iPad. And it's very, you know, we have photographer friends because the way that because it folds out, they're like, that's perfect. I put all my equipment in there and I just can see everything the way that it is. It, like, we call it the toolbox.
Yeah.
And so many people have started to use the bags for different things other than just diaper bags, which then all too within the company has internally created to, like, okay, are we just a diaper bag company? Are we going to venture off into more of a lifestyle thing with our sort of foundation being the Willow and the Bear? And that's truthfully been sort of the evolution, and it's a really exciting thing to be able to think like that's where this sort of the next thing is, creating other bags that will always sort of have that, the basis of the family, but we'll have that, you know, the young single dad, the single mom, the different assets of being that throughout that lifestyle, other part ways that we can go down in the baby world. So, but again, no pun intended, it's all baby steps. And it's been a long road, but I literally, the 5 years that it's been, maybe it's 6 years now, I really feel like September of 2019 was like the first day that we said open for business. Nice. And it's been phenomenal.
AJ, congrats on that. I love hearing just, like, I can tell the passion that you have for this project. And, of course, put up links on where people can purchase it at paperclip.life.com. I love it for so many reasons. Like you said, it's not just, you know, just for dads. It's a parenting bag, and it can go with so many different things. It's versatile. And as a sneakerhead, man, I got to give you a shout. Whoever did the photography for your website, on like one of the very first displays, you have a pair of Air Jordan 1s in the diaper bag, man.
Yeah.
So that to me sealed the deal.
I love it. That's Mikey and Luke in our company that literally work around the clock, and those are two other guys that have stepped, and both of them aren't dads, which is what we wanted. We wanted, you know, we didn't want everything. We wanted people within the company that had a cap on like what's cool and what's hip and that vibe. Because, you know, when you get zeroed in as a dad, all you see is diapers and, you know, Elmos and Sesame Street and Goldfish. And, you know, those are the things that sort of cloud your mind. And then you're sort of numb to the other things that are portrayed changing or what's hip or what's next. So we wanted a younger vibe of people that have that, be able to do, you know, tap into different things. Like, what is cool right now? What is that? So when we do post that, we do tap into that other people that then see the bag is also that in that lifestyle style brand. So that credit goes to Artie, Mike, and Luke. They just crushed that.
Nice, man. So awesome. I love the story just on all fronts, man. And I know I can't wait to share this with my community here and then also to my viewers and listeners over at the Art of Fatherhood podcast. A couple questions about acting and then we'll go back into fatherhood, man. Currently, like you said, you're on your way to work, be shooting for the SEAL team. Very popular show. Talk a little bit about, like, I'm always curious, just kind of like with, I love the creation story and the inspiration story you had and the blood, sweat, and tears you guys put in for the, paperclip line. But for as an actor, talk about how you prepped up for this series and how you and the, you know, fellow castmates created that chemistry for the show.
It was a pretty crazy sort of road. I'll rewind it just a bit. And again, it's kind of weird when I look back. It's the first time I'm kind of thinking about this. The timing of the two, the sort of evolution and changing and myself and when you become a dad, how your brain, I think, just changes for the better. For me, it did anyways. Because you're inspired, and again, you have this. I've always had an incredible work ethic, but this is like makes you super laser focused. And the thought of ever failing in front of my kids because I didn't try. It's okay to fail in front of your kids, but failing because I didn't put the effort in is something I never want to do. I'm always, I'm like, look, I always say to my kids, look, you fail, that's fine, but if you fail because you didn't give 100%, that's a totally different conversation. So for me, and that's something I learned from my father, was that you got to outwork everybody in the room. And when I gotten off CSI New York, I kind of went through this really dark place. My father passed away, and I was drinking. Yeah, it's all right. It's all right. Willow was born, and I just was out of shape, and things weren't clicking. And I remember missing out on an opportunity because I just wasn't focused. And I remember coming home and how the feedback was, he's the best guy for the part, but he's not in the shape that we need him to be for the role. And we don't have enough time to get him in the shape that we need. And that killed me because that was all on me. So it slipped, a huge opportunity slipped through my fingers, and my kid was just born. And so I said to my wife, I'm never going to have this happen again. And again, I just kind of went laser focusing again, the best shape of my life through that. It was probably like a year later, the opportunity for SEAL Team came, and I just had peaked. And so like, I just was like, had hit like the best shape. If I did this series up in Canada prior to, and I'd met this trainer up there, and I was away from my kids, from Will at the time. And I just decided, you know, I'm just not going to drink. I'm just going to train as if this is like a boot camp. And for the 5-6 months I was up there, I just worked my ass off and worked with this trainer, Adrian Bennett, one of the best trainers I ever worked with. And I came back in the best shape of my life and so focused. And that I just remember saying that if I'm going to spend time away from my daughter, I'm going to make sure that it's worth every second that of me being 100% of who I could be. And I got back here and it was like 3 days in, I saw my manager. She's like, it's the best you ever looked. Opportunity came up. And I booked the role, and that was sort of that long-winded story to get to here. But then getting this role was literally—I remember reading the script, and I was like, "Holy crap! This is any guy's dream." You know, my favorite character growing up was John McClane.
Yeah,
I've always wanted to play. I've always wanted to do like a die-hard type of character, and this was the closest thing thus far that I get to do that. Fly around the Blackhawks and shoot big guns and blow things up. And it was sort of like this sort of knuckle dragger, nondescript sort of Texan guy, but there wasn't really a thing. And creator Ben Cavell, who I'd worked with on Justified, was like, yeah, just, you know, let's come up with something. So I really kind of leaned on John McClane and kind of created this other southern one-liner guy, and it's just been a really cool experience. And what's really cool about, what I'm really proud about the show, is that over 70% of our crew are actual veterans.
Nice.
The show is based on a book by Mark Owen called No Easy Day, and a lot of those guys from that mission, the Osama bin Laden mission, are our tech advisors on the show that we work with every single day. We've got super high-ranking guys from both Army, Navy, Marines. All of those guys are stunt doubles, all special operations guys. We've vets that are writers, team guys that are in the writer's room, that are producers now on the show. We just had a Ranger, Army Ranger guy, Tyler Gray, who directed an episode for the first time, and that's never happened on television before.
Wow.
So there's a real sense of pride with our show that I've never felt for a show before, where the ability to, where people are like, oh, the show is really authentic. And that goes down to one of our sort of leader of the group, Chris Chulak. He basically set the tone, said, look, if we're going to be true to these guys have a lot of say on set, from the writer's room to if a director's doing something that they don't think is truthful to the environment that these guys operate in, then we do not shoot it. And that's unheard of. Having a tech advisor be able to outrank, so to speak, a director while he's shooting a scene, saying that's not the way we would go. The directors of the show really have to listen to the tech advisors, because they've fought in these wars. They've been in every situation imaginable, and they're the best in the world at that. It's because of them why the show looks the way it does. And, overall, it's an incredible collaborative effort by everybody. But at the end of the day, if it wasn't for the veterans that we work with, the show wouldn't look anything like that. We would have been canceled in the first year.
Gotcha. Thanks very much for sharing that. One more question before we go back into fatherhood, sir. The origin story for Paperclip. I loved you kind of talking about how you got your mindset for on the right path, and how you got SEAL, be on SEAL team on CBS. Talk about, like, when you came down the road to be an actor. What was, like, was there an inspiration? Was there, like, an aha moment? Talk a little bit about, like, what drove you down this path.
Yeah, I do remember that aha moment. I think when aha moments happen in life, you've gotta listen to them, or it's like reading a book and not getting all the details in a chapter, and you've got to start the chapter all over again and be like, I missed something. Who is that character? And you go back, and the aha moment is then flipping the page and going, okay, let's go to the next chapter. And I think for me, I'd been down in Los Angeles. I came down when I was 17, 18. I did a movie for David Nutter, a big television director, Game of Thrones guy now. And he sort of took me under his wing. I was getting odd jobs here and there, and I kind of fell into some tough times. I kind of lost, as you do when you come to a big city and you're young and influential. Influence usually. I didn't know who I was. I didn't know who I was, a man. I wasn't even a man yet, but just I didn't know who I was. I had this, I would pretend to people that I had money and there was this, I was just lying to myself. I ended up in a place where I didn't feel good, where, somebody would loan me some money or my parents would send me some money. It just started getting old, because I was like, I think I was 25 at the time, and I'm like, I'm just going to continually get like money from people. And I've no, yeah, I'm gonna then just go out and spend it, recklessly. And so I remember telling my parents, I'm like, look, I can't take another dollar from you guys. You guys have helped me out so much. I said, every dollar that comes in my bank account, it's got to be mine. And I said that to my friends. I'm like, I love you guys. I appreciate the support. But I got to make it on my own. Otherwise, this is going to end tragically. And you guys have raised me to be better than this. And I got to figure it out. And it got to a point where I lived in my car. I lived in my car for about a year and a half. And that actually literally broke my mom's heart, because she was like, what are you doing? But I actually, truthfully, that was some of the best times of my life, because I was super honest with everybody around me. And the conversation I had with myself, look, I got my health, I'm chasing my dreams, and I got my parents, got friends, people believe in me. I'm like the richest guy in the world. I'm good. Like I don't want to go home and go back to doing a 9-to-5. Not that there's anything wrong with 9-to-5, but this for me was what was the life I wanted to go. And that fire really started burning again. I was like, okay, so now you're at the bottom right now. So how do you get out of here? And again, it was just being okay with who you are. And I always remember there was a time where I took this girl out on a date. I took her up to like Mulholland Drive, and I pulled over in front of this like really beautiful house up there. And she said, she's like, "Where do you live?" And I was in my mind just going to tell her I live here, like in my car. But I said, "I live here." And she looked at this giant mansion. She's like, "This is your house?" I'm like, "Oh God." I'm like, no, not the house. I live in my car. And she was just like, "You live in your car?" I'm like, "Yeah." She's like, "You need to take me home." I'm like, "Okay." And that just ended. So she brought me home. I brought her home, and but I felt good about it. I was like, "Okay, whatever." And then again, an opportunity came up, and that was CSI New York. And I found out I booked CSI New York, and I still have the bank receipt from
nice.
What was in my that day, because I was in a 7-Eleven parking lot. I had $32.95 in my bank account, and I was going to buy like a Slurpee or a Big Gulp and some like microwavable mac and cheese and get some gas. And that was kind of like what my day was going to be. And then I got the call that I booked CSI New York, and I signed like a 7-year deal with CBS, and that changed my life forever.
Oh, love that, man. Again, so many like inspirational stories through this. I'm so glad you're on the show. Now into fatherhood, you know, you talk about, you know, just listening to you, sir, it's like, okay, perseverance, making sure that you're doing it on your own. A lot of different things you can, you know, instill into your kids just with your own experience. Talk about some of the core values you're looking to instill into your kids as they're growing up.
There's, you know, something that I'm realizing lately, and it's something that, you know, I'll touch on a little bit. It is we become a society that we're about hashtagging and posting, and that's it. Like pray for California for wildfire, pray for gun control, pray for you know, these people, pray for that, hashtag this, hashtag that. But nobody does anything other than what the Instagram post is. And that to me is something I want to break with my kids.
Yeah.
I don't want them thinking that by posting on a social platform, pray for this or I hope this or some sort of Instagram tag, that's enough. I want them to, it's about showing up. It's about doing the work. It's about if something does move you in some way, shape or form, then be a part of it. Don't sit on the sidelines. And, you know, I'll share this story with you because it's sort of in process, and I think it's important to get this word out. A week ago or so, there's a fighter. I love UFC and Bellator and all that, and there's a fighter that I've been following for years, Justin Wren, and he has this foundation called The Fight for the Forgotten, and he basically helps build wells in Africa, and he has this amazing bully foundation. And I saw that he posted this video of this autistic kid named Raiden, who's
yes,
deaf in one ear. You saw that?
I saw that thing. Yeah, I retweeted his thing. I'm again social media, just doing that. But like, yeah. I was just trying to like for that one, I was just trying to like raise awareness, being like, we got to do better, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So I reached out to him and I had never talked before, and I said, look, I don't know what I can do, but I want to help. And he was like, hey, I'm here in Los Angeles right now. He was getting some tests done because he's a fighter, and when he was over in Africa building the wells, he got some malaria and stuff, and he was trying to get back into the fighting thing. So he's getting a bunch of tests done, and I'm like, well, let's link up and put our heads together. So I, with him, I was like, look, I don't know what I can do, but I was bullied really badly, and this hits home for me, and it still affects me to this day. So I met up with him, and I just said, look, I want to fly him and his family out, and they've never left Oklahoma. The family's going through a really tough time right now because they've got to, you know, take the son, Raiden, to get his treatment, to his therapist. He's on like 7 different medications right now. He's written things saying that he wants to kill himself. And this kid is, I haven't physically met him yet, but is the most beautiful kid you've ever seen. He is so happy and just wants to be loved. And I was like, look, if I can help this kid in any shape, way, or form, so we're going to fly the kid out, and we're going to take him to Universal Studios. And nice. Teddy Atlas has jumped on board as well. He's going to take his foundation, going to take him to Disneyland. I don't have a foundation yet, but maybe it's turned in. I'm going to turn it into something. I'm going to work with Justin a lot now. He's an unbelievable guy, but we're going to bring him, you know, to Knott's Berry Farm and meet him with Times and take him surfing. And he's never seen the ocean before, so him and his family are going to take him out. And I part of the reason my wife had said, she's like, what's driving you this? And I said, babe, I want to set an example for our kids. I want them to see that if they see something that bugs them, they got to step up. I said, because nothing in this world is ever going to change if we don't step up. We cannot sit back and think that a post is going to change people's life. When people post inspirational quotes, I think everybody flips over. They're like, yeah. We become numb to human beings going through atrocities. We really have. Like, yep. You're like, it's a hashtag, and they think that's up, and it's just not. And I myself have fallen in that habit. So I really want to set an example for them that it's about showing up. Whatever it is in life, you got to show up. And when you show up, just give it your best. Give 100%. It's okay to fail, but just give it 100%. And that's it.
Totally agree with you, AJ. And yeah, I mean, for me, with my daughters, they're 11 and 9 years old, respectively. And like, you know, sometimes people like just with the Instagram or, you know, social media, like hashtag, like, oh, someone asked me like offline one time, like, oh, you know, just knowing you, I thought you would like follow this movement and all that. I'm like, yeah, I understand. Like, I appreciate it. But like, one of the biggest things for me is like, I want to leave this planet knowing that my kids, I left a positive effect in this world. And then two, like, I'm going to be able to instruct my kids to do the same. Right. That's all. I mean, you want your kids to be productive, positive people in this world. And I feel like if you do that, you know, if you get off social media and then you just actually show them, lead by example, they will take that more than just a hashtag. So totally agree, man. I love it. What popped into your mind when you found out you're going to be a dad?
Nice. That's basically what I said. I was like, I'll never forget this. I was shooting a movie in New Orleans. My wife had come down to see me. And again, this was after my dad died, and there was a bunch of things that financially had happened. So, you know, I went from making a ton of money and it didn't manage as well as I should, per se. Again, that life experience that you have and the learning experience. And I'm glad it happens at the time that it does, at the age that it does, because then when you have kids, it sort of prepares you like, okay, I'm not going to do that again.
Yeah.
So my wife had come down a couple times to visit, and her dad was a big fan of Jim Belushi, and I was actually producing the movie as well, and Jim Belushi was in it. So we'd only been dating about a year, and no question, I knew she was the one. Her dad was downstairs in the bar, and him and I were gonna, because I was been working on Day on Set, was sort of preoccupied, and I hadn't had really time to catch up with him. And her dad Bob is awesome, and absolutely love. Feel very fortunate to have a father-in-law like him. Hey, Cole, he said, and her sister, Alicia, was an actress. She was in the movie as well. So they're both downstairs in the bar waiting for me. And I was like, hey, I'm going to go upstairs and change, shower, and we're down, and then we'll catch up. Looking forward to it. It's going to be great. And sure enough, I go upstairs, and the phone rings, and my wife, and she's crying. And I'm like, what's going on? I'm like, what? She can barely talk. And she's like, I'm pregnant. I'm like, what? And I'm like, oh, my God. And then she's like, don't say anything to anybody though. I'm like, okay, like I'm literally going to meet your dad and your sister for like, what? So the phone starts ringing and, in the hotel room, and I pick it up and be like, hey, we're just waiting. How long, much longer it's going to be? And I'm like, I'll be down in like 2 minutes. And then like another 20 minutes of talking to Abby. I'm like, okay. I go down. So I basically kept them waiting down there for an hour at least. And they're just like, okay, what's going on with this guy? Like, they're like, what are you doing? And then they like, the whole point was to eat dinner, and I didn't eat any food, and I don't even remember what they were asking me, but I was not present. And I guess Bob, he's cool. But he doesn't take offense to anything. But he was definitely like, what is he on drugs, or what is he doing? You know, who's dating my daughter?
Yeah,
because it's supposed to be some bro time, and it just did not. So sure enough, I was like, you got to tell your sister, because I completely sped down there. And finally, she flew back out to tell her sister in person. And then we told her dad. But it was definitely a scary moment. But it was kind of, again, it happened at the right time. It was about a year after my dad had passed away, a year or two after my, so it was like, and again, I was kind of going through the troubles that I was going through mentally, just with grieving, and her Willow, finding out we have Willow was a really big thing. And I'm born in Dublin, Ireland. We sort of, there's a belief that the first born after someone passes away takes the soul of the person that died. So the belief is that, you know, so my father, so it was reborn, and that's why we gave her the middle name Phoenix, Willow Phoenix Buckley.
So, oh man, I got goosebumps. Listen to that, man. That is love it. So good, man. I'm so glad you're on the show. I think a lot of dads are going to love just your take on fatherhood and your stories. What is one big piece of advice you'd offer to new dads listening to this?
Cry in front of your kids. Mm. It's okay.
Yep.
But show them emotion. Be vulnerable.
Yes.
It's okay. It's okay. Just be vulnerable. You don't have to be tough all the time.
They know
you're tough, and I think my daughter, rather than not have her think that something's off, be able to communicate that, you know, whatever it is that it is, because I feel like that one bridges the communication between you and your child, that if you are going through something and you want to talk about it, as opposed to holding it in, that relationship is sort of there. And then my wife and I have this rule with our phones, where when I come home from work or she comes home from work, that we put our phones are away. Nothing in life is going to happen within the time that the 3 hours they have before they go to bed, or whatever that is going to be, you know. And if it does, then it just wasn't meant to be. The win is you're with your kids, and that's it. So just put the phones away, you know. Instagram can wait.
Yeah, 100% agree, man. Love that. And
And that's a work in progress too. That's not like, sometimes we got to remind each other, like, that's by no means are we perfect with that. I'll come home and like, hey, I got this call I got to make, and she's like, and then I like, she's like, okay, but we got to like do, like, there's times, there's trade-offs, there's things we got, you know, that life happens that we got to, you got to do. But I always say 70-30, like, if you're 70% good and the 30% you have some flip, then you're okay. But if you're putting that effort in, like, nobody's ever 100% on that. That's just absolutely impossible. So, and you gotta be able to bend a little bit with life, because otherwise it just creates tension between you and your spouse of like, well, we have this rule. It's like, well, we've got to make exceptions. As long as the exception doesn't become the norm, then you're fine.
Well said, sir. 100% agree on those both pieces of advice. Great there. Now I got the fatherhood quick five. Favorite family movie in the Buckley household is what?
Oh, well, right now I would say it's, what is that Bette Midler movie?
Hocus Pocus? No.
Hocus Pocus is playing on repeat. My daughter loves Hocus Pocus. Absolutely obsessed with Hocus Pocus. But my daughter and I are like, one of our favorite things to do together is, and I've been taking, she loves movies, go to the movies together. So her and I definitely will go check out. She likes to go, like, you know, the movie theaters with like the Lazy Boys or whatever they got.
Yeah.
That's her favorite thing. And that's what was great. Those were a godsend for parents, because you could like lay them flat out. The kid could jump around. You pay the extra buck to kind of sit away from everybody. And they just jump around. I don't know if I'm going to have success with my twin boys, because boys are just crazy and are different. But my daughter, actually, a really cool thing, one of the coolest experiences and memories I have with my daughter was I did a Pixar movie called The Good Dinosaur.
Yes. Yeah.
And the very first movie that she ever saw in a theater was at the premiere of that. Ugh. And it was so funny because she kept looking at the movie screen and then looking up at me. And I didn't tell her. Like, I kind of tried to explain to her, but she didn't understand. At the park, she would say, she would walk up to people. She's like, my daddy's a T-Rex. And I'd be like, okay. Yes. it was definitely cool thing. But her and I, we love watching, going to the movies together, just watching. Every Friday night with my daughter Willow is movie night. We get pizza, movies, and if I'm working late, it's Saturday night. But that's religious at our house.
Oh, love that, AJ. Yeah, and how much cool dad cred you got? Especially like first movie she saw, you're one of the main characters in that. That's fantastic, man. So cool. Favorite family song, or is there a band you can't wait to introduce your kids to when they get a little bit older?
There's probably a bunch of like my dad, I got my dad's record collection when he passed away. So Willow's heard a bunch of stuff. So, you know, any of the old rock and roll from The Who to Stones to the Beatles, all that stuff, I think. And it's cool because you pull out the record player and their brains are like, what is that? You know, so it's kind of a cool thing. I've had to put it away because the boys are smash and grab right now.
Yep.
So I'll wait till they get a little older, pull that out. But that's something. And when I introduce them to those songs, I want them to hear it first on that,
yeah.
Which is cool. And the other thing, too, it's crazy. I've really gotten into country playing this character. So there's a lot of, and my daughter now absolutely loves country. One of my co-stars, Max Terriot, he's a huge country buff, and we drive to work every single day, except for today, for character research and stuff. He's like, dude, you need to, if you're playing a Texan, you need to know about country. But now I'm like, I love country. My wife loves country. So there's a lot of country music, like old Garth Brooks. Mm. The first song I played when my boys had just got out of the NICU, mm-hmm. they heard that Garth Brooks, you know, it's on Dream is Like a River, or Phone is whatever, Dream is Like a River.
Yeah.
You know that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's called Dream. Or River. It's called The River. It's called River. So that one. So yeah, I'd say that.
Nice. Love that, man. Describe the perfect family vacation. Where would it be?
Last year we took the kids to Mexico, and I realized for Christmas, and Christmas is a very special thing for us, and it was awesome, but it just didn't have the magic. So for holiday stuff, home is yes. Where for Christmas, home, 100% home is where I want to be with the kids, and because of those memories are stitched into my mind of just, you know, what the routine we had and the breakfast we'd make and Santa coming and all that. So this is our first Christmas that we're going to be at home with all three kids, which I'm super excited about. But we had a vacation this past summer that to me is going to be hard to beat, or we'll continue to go do it. There was a lake up in Canada that we went to every year as a child for like 12 summers. My parents had this little cabin up in Shuswap Lake, and we went up there, and then I told my wife, I said, I want to bring the kids up there. We'll go up, you know, 2 weeks just before I go back to work and just tap out and just spend time with the kids. And we got to go up, and it was cool because I got to take Willow where my dad, you know, took me fishing, and she actually caught a fish in the area that I caught the fish with my dad. And so it was cool. And I got to sort of walk down memory lane with her, and I think that's important. I think that's is creating, you know, things that they can attach to, like, you know, not a routine per se, but things that they're like, oh, that summer we did this, and this summer, and a place they're familiar where they can, you know, one day go back and say, oh yeah, my dad did that for me right there, and have that moment. So I think that's important.
Such a good story, man. Yeah, I love the fact that, you know, there's life repeating itself through your kids from, you know, the past with your parents, man. It's almost like you read my mind. I know you're into the UFC. I was going to say, do you have a favorite fighter? I'm guessing you have a favorite fighter now, right?
Yeah, Conor McGregor has always been, I know he has had his troubles, but he's definitely one of my favorite fighters. I'm super excited about the Nate Diaz BMF title this Saturday. I think that's at Madison Square Gardens. I just got to work with, he did a small little spot on SEAL Team where he kicks the crap out of me, and that's Dan Henderson. It was in last night's episode, and he literally beats the living piss out of me. And it was awesome. And he's one of the nicest guys ever. So yeah, I'd say those guys for sure.
Nice. Love it. And lastly, what are the top three words you hope your kids would use to describe you as a dad?
He loved me.
Love it. Very cool. People, make sure you follow AJ on Twitter at AJohnBuckley and go to Instagram at AJBuckley and go to papercliplife.com. I can't stress this enough. You got to go check it out because these diaper bags are legit. These are the things that I know a bunch of dads that I know were always like, there's no diaper changer tables in different restaurants. Well, Paperclip is going to change that for you guys. Great invention, and I know you're a busy guy. Thanks for taking the time to chat with me. Continued success in the future, sir.
Thank you. And one more thing. If they do go for us and they do buy the bag and they enjoy the bag, as a young company, if they either buy it on Nordstrom.com or they buy it on Paperclip, either or, if they can leave a review, reviews I guess, are gold.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
So if anybody does that, it from one dad to another, one parent to another, I would greatly, greatly appreciate it. Reviews. And like I said, if you like it, just tell another mom in the playground, and our company will hopefully continue to grow.
Very cool, man. Yeah,
great,
no doubt.
Great being on your show. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, you take care.
Thanks for having me.
Yep. All right, cool.
Take care, buddy. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Art of Fatherhood podcast. Leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts and go to theartoffatherhood.net.